All right, continuing on with Transform the Data Center Immersion and Application Management. We saw some cool stuff on DevOps with the on-premise app, and now we're talking hybrid apps, into some more advanced stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's walk through some couple of scenarios of why you might need hybrid apps. And hybrid apps may mean a lot of things to different customers. When I think of a hybrid app, I think of tiers in multiple clouds. And the great thing about that is those clouds can be anywhere. That's one of the great things about Microsoft. Mm-hmm. It's the cloud. You know, whether mm-hmm. it's Azure, whether it's on-premise, or whether it's a service provider, we can utilize them with the same set of tools and the same set of experiences. Mm-hmm. So let's actually have a look at a couple of things here. So you can see here that, a challenge that a lot of us face is that, you know, maybe I'm getting degradation or performance issues because I'm running out of capacity, I'm running out of memory or CPU. And generally that can be, in a physical data center environment, this can be a real challenge, especially if I've peaked the amount of memory I can throw mm-hmm. at that server.
Yeah, especially when you're starting to get give developers, like it's our example, Rebecca here, the power to see that console like we've showed. Mm-hmm. They're starting to say, hey, I notice you've got X milliseconds delay mm-hmm. in this app. And you're like, that's not fair, but okay, all right, I see what you're saying. And so now you need to help them out, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is one of the great things that we can do. So with the System Center 2012, we can actually set up intelligent scale bursting. And what does that mean? It actually means that when our application hits a capacity threshold, if it's given the right to, and you've completely got control over this, it can then burst across tiers or across clouds. So for example, here, I can actually burst into Azure, like a burst a tier, maybe mm-hmm. my web tier. I can burst my web tier in Azure, getting access to much more capacity than I might have in my current data center to ensure that that customer-facing application is still available and still working at 100%.
Well, and that could be, I'm sure, a really powerful thing. I know I hear talking to customers, hey, I've got a campaign, or hey, I've got a website that I'm spinning up, and I'm not sure how much traffic I'm going to get on this thing. Mm-hmm. Right here, it sounds like you could just scale that thing up to the cloud, even after you tap out of your on-premise resources if the thing goes viral, right?
Exactly. And the great thing here, it's pay for play, right? So I can scale up into Azure, and I'm only really using the capacity that I require. And I can use the same process to descale or deprovision back down when I'm not being used. So a lot of customers use this to scale their infrastructure in peak times or seasonal times. And other times, they scale back down to where they're planning their data center from. So it gives them the best of both worlds. The great thing here is it's automated. I don't get that 3 o'clock in the morning phone call and have to go in and, right click and provision. This stuff is completely automated.
Yeah, if you were Richard, I mean, maybe the only thing you might have to do is tweak or fine tune the performance metrics of when it bumps up the service or when it scales. You're good to go, right?
Exactly. So the other thing as well is, we talked about service templating in the previous part one of this in the application performance monitoring. And service templating can actually be used in multiple different ways. We talked about it in service template for a certain application. But I can use that same concept of service templating and create standardized service templates across many of departments and many tiers. The great thing about that is then I can provide a great self-service model for these departments. And that's what I want to do. As an IT professional, I don't want to spend my time taking service requests, like personal service requests from all these division owners. Like, I need this server, I need this VM, I need more capacity. I can provide them a great self-service solution, which they can then request. And either I get the system to automatically provide that, or at that stage, I can get manually involved if there's something a little bit more complex they require.
I was I was looking at the dialogue here between Lewis and Richard.
Absolutely.
and Lewis, the app team, he says, hey, you didn't provision my resources. It took me 3 weeks last time. And then Richard here says, well, no, actually, you just go to create a service request, and that does it. Like pretty quickly.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, you can pretty much get many of these things out in hours. I mean, depending on how your infrastructure is set up and your service templating is set up, that's what you want. You want people to be able to, within the realms and boundaries that you have provided as the IT owner, you can provide them access to all the infrastructure that they need in a great self-service environment. Then they configure the environments they need.
Right.
And the great thing is then the capacity that you're provided is load balanced across the organization. So again, you're using the best amount of capacity. You don't have servers that are 90% and servers that are 15%. So it takes the load off you and you can do much more important strategic things.
Right, yeah. And I mean, you know, if you want to put layers of approval in there, great. Or, you know, you could go just free will, letting people do it. And if you have chargeback, it's like, well, you're fronting the bill. So, hey, if you want to fire up what you want to fire up, go ahead.
Oh, exactly. And that's fully integrated. It was a great new technology in SP1. We have our look back and charge back components, so you can actually provide deep, rich reports, and not technology reports. These are, you know, financial reports back to, you know, people that understand the finance. Yeah. You know, the spreadsheet junkies in our organizations. We can provide this information to them and say, you know what? Here's the current capacity you're using. Here's how much it costs or what we expect it to cost.
Right.
And then we can actually make plans. You know, they can actually make forecast plans on IT budget and technology budget they may require over the next few years. So let's go and jump into a great experience, which we call DevOps and the hybrid cloud or the hybrid application. And we're actually going to do some exciting things here. So let me set this scene up. So in the last part one of this, we had this Contoso Electronics application, which may have some erratic behavior, which we may have forced.
Yeah, you got the monkeys that just mess things up with SQL, I tell you.
So what we've did, and then we showed how ways that we can respond to that, fix that, you know, and bring that beautiful life cycle of the developer and the IT operations guys together. In this scenario, what we want to do is create a mobile extension for that application, and we want to use some really fast development techniques to do that. And then we also want to, we also want to start taking advantage of cloud services to deploy that application, just for scale and speed. So we're going to show you here integration of the Azure world and the on-premise world on how we can do things such as database syncing, how we can quickly provision developer clouds on-premise, and then how we can then deploy those packages that developers have created, because the packages are the same. You know, I can create a cloud package and deploy that on-premise or in Azure, and we're going to show you how we can just, we've created a cloud package and we can deploy that through our Azure services, and then we're going to sort of return back to GSM. It's sort of like, you know, return.
Hey, you just keep coming back to the cycle of monitoring.
Exactly.
That's how it goes.
You know, and this is that whole concept. This is a life cycle, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we're monitoring, updating, monitoring, you know, being able to do these things. So, and I want to show you another exciting aspect of GSM, which I think is quite exciting. All right. So we're going to start in Azure here. I've already logged in Azure as my user, and you can see here's my Azure services. And there's some really exciting things, and I think one of the great things is be able to quickly provision SQL databases in Azure in a couple of clicks. In fact, we're actually going to do that. So we've got our SQL databases here, and we're going to just go and provision a new SQL database. So we're going to go SQL database, and we're going to click Quick Create. And really, to do a quick create, all we need really to do is to give it a name.
So while he's typing that, I mean, this is SQL Azure, right?
Yes.
So SQL Azure is similar, very similar to your on-premise SQL, but has some advantages and some limitations, to be fair, right? You know, where you can quickly provision a database and scale that up pretty powerfully, which is one of the great advantages of SQL Azure, right?
Yes, absolutely. All right.
We're asked, like, right, if you had an on-premise application, right, on-premise SQL, you have to get a VM, a server, and spin that up if you're doing it manually. Or, right, if you have a service template with SQL, in our case, private cloud, you've got a little more automated fashion.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So now we've created that SQL database. You can see we have our Sales Hub 128, and while we're talking, that sort of created straight away. The next thing we want to do is we actually want to link our on-premise environment into our Azure environment. And there's this cool thing called the SQL Sync Agent. Mm. So my developers have been using, you know, an on-premise environment and created a SQL database that. So I don't have to replicate or I don't have to recreate that database in Azure. I can sync the two. So if ever changes happen in that on-premise one, I can actually update that into Azure and back and forth as well. So it's a great integration of the two worlds. So to do this, I'm just going to add a new sync agent. And we're just going to give it a couple of names here. So I'm just going to call this my agent 128, which is my user ID. I'm going to leave everything as default. You can see here's a region. These are the regions, the Azure regions. I'm going to choose the one that's closest to me.
Right. And you want to probably have the agent on the same place where the SQL database is as well. So you probably want to be choice in selecting, I'm guessing, the same data server for SQL, as for the agent, as for the close proximity to your where you're going to connect that agent to the SQL, right?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And then I'm just going to click on the agent. I'm going to get the key, generate a key, and this is the key that we're going to use to communicate our on-premise environments into my Azure environment. So you can see I'm just going to hit the generate key. Gives me this long-winded key, which I'm then going to cut and paste. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to open up my local database server, or the local server that my database is running on, put the SQL and the SQL sync agent, and start linking these two together.
Friendly little thing too, you can always, in Azure, there's that dialog box, the little copy thing. You can click on that to copy to clipboard.
Oh, absolutely.
Good times.
Okay, we're almost logged on here. All right, so I've got my SQL environment open here, so I'm just going to go open my start menu. And I'm going to bring up the SQL agent. So here's our SQL data sync agent.
And that was something you already downloaded and installed on this particular SQL server.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
So you can actually get this from the SQL side or the Azure side. I'm now going to submit the agent key. So this is the key that was provided to us via Azure. Once I've loaded that key in, I'm then going to register this service with Azure. Put the information about my local SQL server. So I've got my local server here, my database, Contoso Electronics. I'm going to hit the save button, and I'm basically done. At that stage now, I'm synced, and you can see that it's all reachable, and I'm now starting to sync that information in Azure.
So when you say sync, you're saying that all of that SQL data on-premise is now synchronizing into SQL Azure.
Exactly. And
okay.
Then I can use that database then if I deploy an Azure Cloud Service, I can actually use that database to deploy and connect to that Azure Cloud Service to that database, knowing that it's got all the data that I used in my dev environment. Okay, we're just going to shut out of this. Okay, and you can see back here that our connection has gone good.
Wow, that was quick.
So it's yeah. Super quick. So that shows you really great integration of the two environments. So the next thing I want to look at is I want to deploy a new service into Windows Azure. And the way I'm going to do this is also through App Controller. So basically, what I want to show is how we can deploy a new cloud service or any other thing with App Controller into Azure environment. I can do this with a service provider as well. So it's sort of quite exciting. Okay, so our next scenario, what I want to do is show you how with App Controller we can view our clouds across both on-premise, Azure, and service provider if we have them. That's very exciting now, but I think one of the big things is I want to show you how we can do this via a user context as well. So App Controller has the ability to secure via users. So I can actually change access to certain environments by their user context, in this case, Active Directory. Now you're going to ask me, why is that important?
Why is that important? Why? I'm glad you asked.
I'm glad you asked.
I had to ask with that kind of voice, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you why it's important. If you've ever used Azure, what you're going to find is that you have a live ID. And as such, that live ID is an all or nothing. Right? So effectively, if I give you access to my Azure environment, you can come in and edit my Azure environment. Now, I don't want everyone like developers and application controllers coming in and editing my Azure environment.
Yeah.
So I can actually use App Controller to define your access to my Azure environment, what clouds you have access to, what libraries you have access to. I can really go in and provision certain components based on the App Controller environment.
So you don't want to have to add, crazy Michael Leeworthy at live.com to this Azure subscription, and who knows what's going to happen.
Really,
right?
My email address.
No, yeah, no, that's true. It's not. You're right. I don't know you that well, but I mean, if you want to check out as far as the identity piece goes, and you want to use your on-premise identity for Windows Azure to allow access, well, hey. I happened to do a session on that at MMS, WSB 331. You can check that out and learn how to do that.
Exactly. And yeah. It's a great ability. You can see here I've logged on as a different user.
Yep.
And I have a view of my Azure environment. And I can then go and access certain aspects of that. But what you can see here is I just wanted to use this user to show you the cloud view across my organization. So you can see here's a great tile cloud view, which shows my hosted environment, my on-premise environment, and then my Azure environment with the services deployed to it. With my my hoster and my on-premise environment, I can actually see the capacity. I can also view this in a row version as well, so I can actually get a great view of the cloud services that I have available across my entire organization. So it's a very powerful tool in understanding the clouds across my across all my tiers, whether they're public or on premise. Now, this is great, and as this this app owner building this new mobile environment, we showed it our SQL database syncing. But what I want to do is because this is going to be fast development, and my CMO wants this electronic new mobile electronic app out right now.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to use, my developers are going to want a brand new environment to basically develop in. So instead of, going to have to request that off IT, I want to be able to use my self-service automation to basically do that. So we're going to do this through our self-service portal and go and request capacity via that tool.
To create that new web app.
Yes.
So and while you're typing that in, I don't know, just this makes me think of an interesting scenario here where we've now connected that on-premise SQL database up to SQL Azure. And I know, for instance, in Azure, we have Azure Mobile Services, where it really helps you quickly create, cross-platform applications that tie back into to storage for Windows Azure. So, if you're thinking about writing a new application, now that you have that SQL back-end SQL database in Azure as well as on-premise, you could possibly write a pure Azure cloud application, right? That uses that SQL Azure up there. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is my self-service portal. This is going to be available for my application owners and maybe their developers to actually go and request a capacity, request an environment for them to build or develop an application in. So you can see that I can click on my cloud resources. And as such, I can actually request resources here, such as a private cloud. Or in this case, I'm going to create a new virtual machine. And it's a very simple tool for my users to walk through. So I'm going to go to my request form, and it's going to ask me a bunch of information here. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to populate it with a name. In this case, I'm going to populate it with my VM name that I want. I can then choose a VM size. I mean, if you're familiar with Azure and on-premise clouds, you might have this information, mediums, large, small. You completely control that as the IT administrator based on your tiering. I'm then going to choose my network. Now, because I want this to be able to be tested from either GSM, I can actually do APM on my dev environment as well. It's not just production, but I can use APM across all tiers of my environment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to choose public access, so I know those VMs have access to the internet, and I can do that testing maybe with that database sitting up in Azure. Mm-hmm. And then I can determine what cloud I want. In this case, I can choose my gold cloud. That's going to give me access maybe to further capacity or highly available solutions that I may need in this environment.
Or possibly a quicker SLA to get it provisioned.
Oh, absolutely. So you can see I get a summary there. I hit the submit button, and now my request has been submitted. And I can have that environment, pretty much up in minutes, if not hours, where before this might take, literally weeks to get an environment provisioned.
Yeah, and most definitely, I hear a lot of folks at shops that are out there that they've got their developers going around the IT department and setting up cloud services, development resources under their desk, and this, if you start to show this to your organization and your developers, really eliminates that reason for them to have to do that when you can quickly get things up and running.
Yeah, we call that the hidden cost of IT. You know, the dev guys that have got the services under his desk, or he's gone and created his own cloud subscription. You want to control all this. I mean, this is, you want organizational workflow and organizational knowledge. You want to be able to utilize your capacity, and you want to secure it. I mean, this might be your company's IP, and you can provide that in a great self-service model. It's a fantastic solution. So now our developers have created that application. You know, they've been given the new environment. They've created that application. And we want to now deploy this new application out into Azure. So they've created a cloud package, and we've uploaded that into the Azure library. And now, and our organization can now easily deploy that application. So let's walk through deploying that application via App Controller into Azure. So we'll go back to our application environment. We'll continue to use Lewis. All right, so here we're in App Controller again. I'm just going to go look at my library. And here's all my library services. You can see here's my Windows Azure services, in Windows Azure. And I can expand my subscription here and my container and actually see the packages that are available here. So here's the packages that have been the cloud service package that's been updated into my Azure environment. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually right-click this guy here. And I'm going to hit deploy. So now I'm going to deploy this cloud service, this new mobile application in Azure. First thing it's going to want me to do is configure a cloud service. So a cloud service is like a container which is going to host or this application. I'm going to go quickly create one just to walk you through sort of creating one. So we're going to provide a new cloud service here. In this case, I'm just going to quickly name this cloud service something that's relevant for me in my organization. At this moment, the only people that can see that would be me with the name. And I do that for administrative purposes. But down here, you can see this is a public URL. So effectively, this is a URL that you could use in a public forum. So that case, it has to be unique.
Right. This is the same premise as if you go into the Windows Azure Management Console. You have to do the same thing. Your cloud service is going to be your kind of core container for whatever you're going to run, really.
Yep. Okay, so we've done pretty much that. So now we're going to choose that cloud service we just created, and we'll continue to run through the environment. So you can see that our package is now being diagrammed for us, so we understand how our package is going to be used. The next thing we do is configure the deployment. So in this case, we're going to create the information for the deployment. So I'm just going to call this the same thing. I'll call this my cloud deployment. I'm going to choose the operating system here as Windows Server 2012. And then I'm going to put this environment in production, so making this available in the production environment. So that gives me that ability to separate my dev environment in Azure from my production environment in Azure and be able to especially administer them and access them.
Yeah, and to be clear also, I mean, when you have those cloud service packages, of course, this is the ideal way to do it, all through an automated self-service portal and those kinds of things. But if you wanted to do just a manual way, if you get those packages in Azure itself, you can just upload the package and deploy it that way if you had to.
Absolutely. So once we've done that, you can see everything's done. We just basically hit the deploy button, and then that cloud service package, we actually start deploying.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing to point out too here is the power of platform as a service.
Oh yeah.
Right, and this is one of the things that I try and talk to even IT folks about is that's great that you have, let's say, a virtual machine with maybe IIS or apps or other things on that, but platform as a service is really this wave of the future in that you totally abstract everything except pretty much the app and the data. So that way, it makes it far easier to scale those resources, right, and have no downtime when you just say, hey, more instances, or in Windows Azure, you just do the drop down and say, boom. You just scaled it like pretty quickly. Like within seconds, really.
Absolutely. And the great thing is also you can, if you go back, and I'll put a buzz in for the MMS keynote here. If you go back and look at the MMS keynote, you actually see me scale Azure through Orchestrator.
There you go.
So being able to take a web tier on site and actually load balance that between your Azure tier and your local tier and be able to easily scale through instances, as you were saying, through Azure environment as well. So there's so much tight integration between these two environments. All right, so that Azure service has been completed, and effectively we now have that application live sitting out there. So once we have an application live, what do we want to do?
Mm-hmm. We want to monitor it. Now, coming back to monitoring.
So, now we talked about global services monitor before in the application availability, and we showed a custom global service monitor that way. But one of the great things we can now do with global service monitor is take all that IP that our Visual Studio developers have been creating and bring that into GSM, because they create tests. Mm-hmm. I mean, the developers and the testers will create tests to test every boundary of their applications, performance and load. Mm-hmm. We can just take that entire test and use that. Why do we need to create something ourselves?
They're the people who have the depth understanding about
the parameters of their application.
Yeah, and you know, this is the beauty of having the developer in those service templates, right? I mean, in this case with Luis, you know, we provisioned resources, but he could have very easily, and we had to configure some things, you very easily could have, you know, set up a template or things to get that all going where it's pretty even faster deployed. I know we had a couple clicks there, but hey, you want it even faster, mm-hmm. get it pre-configured and let it go, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So you can see here we've got our web test here. So I'm just going to choose the Visual Studio web test monitoring. The last time we chose the web application availability monitoring. And then we're going to go and name our test here. So we're going to just call this our, we'll call it our Contoso VS test. We're going to go back to that management patch that we created earlier. And then we're going to basically determine what to monitor, where before we looked at the global services monitor, what to monitor was the URL. In this case, we're actually going to load in that Visual Studio web test. We're going to do this from one of our file shares. So our developers have kindly loaded their web tests up into a file share for us. So you can see there's my sales at web test. Mm-hmm. And they've done this using the Visual Studio web test recorder. And with that, they've actually captured all the information around the tracking of this. What's performant, what is underperformant, where the alert should be created. Again, this should be the same test that they use in their normal day-to-day testing processes. Then you can see here, this is where I'm going to add that Azure monitor. So if I go hit the search button, it will bring back all my 16 points of presence. And you know, in this case, I want it, because this is a global application, I'm going to monitor them all, which we've done. I've got a little bit of configuration I can do here. Generally, I can update the frequency. So with GSM, I can do it at a minimum of 5 minutes. Really, all you're doing is costing yourself bandwidth at that stage, right, with the communication between you and the Azure system. So you just need to work out what your SLAs are. Do you want to just test it once an hour, once every 10 minutes? By default, out of the box, it's once every 10 minutes. And this is that alert you were talking about as well. You know, how many alerts do you want to see before you're going to start sensing there's a problem?
Yeah, you don't want to get over-flooded with alerts.
Exactly.
Right?
We've also got the ability, if there's multiple alerts, you know, maybe they're coming in one after the other, you've got all, there's something, you know, horrifically wrong with the application and all 16 sites go boom, maybe I don't want all 16 alerts to show me something's going wrong, maybe I just need one to say, hey, something's wrong.
One summary, I think that's probably a good one to check there as you go through it, yep.
Okay, and then effectively that's done, I hit the create button and we're basically done. So now it's loading that information up into GSM, it's basically contacting all of our GSM points of presence at this stage, loading that Visual Studio test file, the synthetic transaction testing, with a schedule, and those 16 Azure points of presence will run that test and then send that information back to me. We'll view it through the reports we saw before.
Back to the whole cycle. It's like we came full circle.
We certainly did.
How about that? Well, wow, that is a lot of great info. Thanks, Michael, so much for your help and educating us all.
Excellent.